Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from within the Mac 6 workspace and Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona. We are Business Radio X, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I'm very excited about a full house today. I have co-host Mike Jones with Resound and our very own AZ Brandcast, which is not only sponsored by Resound, but also Conscious Capitalism of Arizona. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you for having me, Karen.
I'm excited about this.
I am too.
I see you almost really every day.
I know.
And you have your own podcast coming out of our studio, but this is our first opportunity to be in this room together doing this.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah. And we've got some really awesome people in here.
Very excited. A lot of collaboration, a lot of synergy, a lot of enthusiasm. So with that, let me introduce you to our guest today. We have Andy Maurer, a licensed therapist with the Phoenix Counseling Collective and the gentleman who's responsible for bringing us all together today. Welcome to the studio, Andy.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. And also with us is Brandon Clark, co-founder of Startup AZ. Welcome, Brandon.
Good morning.
Yeah, happy to have you. We haven't had a chance to meet yet, so this will be fun to get to know you. And alongside Brandon is Kate Stevenson-Rogers, CEO of CoVibe. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello to you. So I'm very excited. We haven't met either, so outside of a quick touch base with each of you before this segment, this is going to be a fun and I think very insightful and important conversation. So if we could have each of you start off by just telling a little bit about the company and or the organization you represent and why this particular topic that I think most of our conversation is going to be centered around is important to you. Andy, do you mind kicking us off?
Sure. So I'm a licensed therapist at the Phoenix Counseling Collective, which is a practice on 6th Avenue in Roosevelt. It's been owned for about 10 years by Caleb and Elisa Mitchell, and they had brought me in as an associate therapist about 2 years ago. And over those last 2 years, what I've really been specializing in is trauma and abuse, really working with couples and adults around this issue of really knowing their story and how that impacts the way they relate to one another, the way it impacts the way they work, the way they raise their children, the way they engage in community around them. And the reason why this issue has become really important to me is because I am an entrepreneur and own my own business for multiple years. My wife's an entrepreneur, and having to kind of wrestle through our story and our narrative as a couple and recognizing how impactful trauma has been on us as a couple, and then also recognizing how that has impacted the way I do my work and the way that I, some of the limitations I've faced as an entrepreneur, and then hearing more from Kate and Brandon and multiple people in the business space and recognizing, hey, the issue of trauma, the issue of mental health is actually a big problem, but it's not talked about a lot. So that's why I've been really pushing into this community to say, hey, how do we support our leaders better around this issue?
And could I ask you to define trauma for us as it relates to, again, kind of where we're going to go in our conversation?
Yeah. When most people think of trauma, they right away go to things like sexual assault or rape or child abuse, which is trauma. But we fail to recognize that a car accident, a difficult labor and delivery, where co-founders will split running and starting a business, things like that can also be very traumatic. And how we would define trauma is it's a single event or multiple events that happen to somebody, and they are experience those as either emotionally or physically overwhelming, and it has adverse effects lifelong on their physical health, their mental health, their relational health, and even their spiritual health. And to sum that up, we typically say that trauma is a fracture of relationship. So when trauma happens, I become disconnected with myself, I become disconnected with others, and I become disconnected from the work that I'm doing.
Huge. So I'm going to put this out there because I know Mike and I are on social media together. I don't know that he saw it. And I think Andy, you and I are too. I went through something recently with someone who's very close to me. And for 2 weeks, I was almost not available because it was becoming traumatic for me to cope with everything. I mean, it was a suicidal issue. I was owning it, even though it wasn't mine, but this person is so close to me that I just took it. The metaphor that I kind of gave was that, I'll use the term energetically for lack of a better word, but that this person reached in, it was almost as if they grabbed a cancerous tumor and pulled it out of their body and said, here, hold this for me. And because they're so important to me. I took it and went, well, of course I will. And I found a place for it in my body, stuck it in there, and then almost flatlined. Mm-hmm. I know it's a kind of a crazy example, but it's so fresh for me because mm-hmm. while I am a busy startup business owner and a parent and, you know, a friend mm-hmm. and doing everything I am to be here present with my guests and our sponsors, I went through a period of 2 weeks that I was really having a difficult time. I have resources available. I knew that I had to get it together very quickly. And I'm also very candid and open about what's going on. I don't think everybody is that way, not that they have to be, but I knew how to rally. And even with all the skills that I had, it was, I think, one of the most difficult period of time for me for a course of a couple of weeks. And I thought, boy, if I don't get help and if I don't get squared away, I may go down a rabbit hole and this may be a lifelong issue for me. So I just throw that out there because this is real stuff, right? This was not my situation, but I ended up holding it. And when we, you know, lose a child or we go through a divorce or a car accident or whatever could happen that our psyche decides it's traumatic, if we're not having those conversations and knowing how to hold each other in the workplace tenderly, professionally, we're really creating unhealthy workplaces mm-hmm. and those relationships are at risk. In addition to, obviously, the growth of the company and how we're serving our clients. Mm-hmm. So I just throw that out there. And I apologize for not giving you both a chance to introduce yourselves a little bit further, all three of you, because I would love for Mike to share who he is as well. Brandon, would you share for us who you are and Startup AZ?
Yeah, and that was a beautiful story, by the way. So thank you for sharing that. So Startup AZ. So we launched about 3.5 years ago, and we recognize, and there's a small group of us in town that recognize that, you know, as a region, we weren't accelerating quick enough with kind of the growth and the performance of our startup community and primarily our ventures, our companies themselves. And so as we looked at some of the barriers or the blockers that were taking place, a lot of it was mindset focused around some of the things that Andy's talking about. And so this recognition that starting and building a company is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. You know, that by itself could be defined as a traumatic experience that is ongoing, you know, 24/7. But by and large, it was really more recognition that we as a community could rally around our ventures in a way that really hadn't been done. And I think we're a sufficiently networked community. I think we have access to people. And I think that's baked into one of our core principles around this generosity, you know, generosity through access to people. But convening kind of those founders that are at the earliest stages of their ventures. But they've got a team that, you know, they've got people that are relying on them. It's no longer just the two founders that are trying to figure this out. You know, they've gotten to the point where they're, you know, in revenue, they've got customers that are counting on them. They've kind of bought into the, you know, the product or whatever it is that they're building. Now they're leaders of people, you know, they're leaders of tribes. So they themselves needed a tribe. So we zeroed in on two core things. It was really around the performance of these ventures. And then the generosity piece. So essentially, Startup AZ exists to inspire connectivity and generosity in Arizona's youngest, most innovative companies and helping them grow and give back. So it's in the growth and the give back piece that we really zero in on. And so the growth is purely venture performance, but the give back is really critical. And really, I think why we're here today is this idea that a more generous community, a more generous business makes for a more generous society mm-hmm. and what the short and long-term implications of doing that. So that's really where we focus in. And we do a couple of programs. We can get into that Absolutely. Maybe later on in the show, but that's really where we focus.
Great intro. Thank you.
And I'm Katie Stevenson-Rogers. I'm the CEO of CoVibe. What I do is I help build startups. I build companies that employees love to be in by working with the founder, the CEO, the co-founder to help ground themselves in authenticity and allow their employees to be authentic. So I do a lot of work in culture and engagement. I have a recruiting background. I've been involved in startups since 2005, and I'm fairly new here. I've been here for 5 years, moved here from Silicon Valley, and prior to that, Boston. And of course, trauma I've really gotten to enjoy meeting Andy and learning about his work, because I find it just threading through in everything I do every day. I talk about him a lot in my work, actually, because the idea that there is a licensed therapist that is prioritizing the mental health of an entrepreneur, everybody says that makes so much sense. No one's doing it. Certainly when I'm, you know, a coach and a colleague to CEOs and helping them, you know, design and shape their cultures, this requires vulnerability. And this requires them to let someone in to fix. And the result of that is many times the first time they've ever really let go in that way. And I get to learn a lot about them. It's not uncommon that I at the end of an engagement, know more about them than their spouse. So inadvertently, I guess I kind of become a therapist, but I can also relate, because I think the work that you do is usually based upon the things inside you or the experiences you've had in your life that make the most impact. And I can see myself in them, and it makes it an easy conversation for me. I also think it was really brave for you to share your story. And I immediately thought of some of the work that I'm doing right now, and I'm actually partnering with Andy on, is exactly creating a curriculum around how to have a healthy workplace, and how to coach and inspire and engage different workforces, different parts of your workforce, so that it can be healthy. And I immediately had a visual when you were talking of all of the people that have experienced trauma in the workplace as they were watching Blasey Ford, right? And that it brings it up and it makes it real again, whereas you might have found a place for it that it was safe and inaccessible. And I can certainly relate to that. That is exactly my experience was. I was gone for a week to deal with it. So I'm excited for this conversation and to educate people that they're not alone in this phenomenon, that trauma doesn't need to have the stigma that it has, that it's actually, it might seem a little odd, but a gift, because you're learning about yourself and you're accessing your strength and developing in meaningful ways so that you can show up in your life.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Welcome. Mike.
And I'm Mike Jones, co-hosting today with Karen, which is really exciting. And like she mentioned already, I've done a lot of stuff. I do a lot of stuff. My main job is Resound. We help companies find the truth behind their identity so they can live out their companies in a more authentic way. And I think that kind of speaks a little bit to this topic today of trauma, or these both internal and external influences that you were talking about, Andy, that can cause this fracture of relationships. A lot of times that happens because people are not on the same page as to where they're going and why they're doing something together. And that's kind of our mission, is to help people, and really organizations, figure out what it is and why they do it, so that whole teams can be united around that. They can communicate that clearly, both internally and externally, to their market and to their customers. And really, like Brandon, what you were saying of like building those tribes, you can't build a tribe if you don't know what you stand for. And so that's a lot of the work we do. It's so funny, Kate, like I have so many conversations where I feel like I'm turning into a therapist. Mm-hmm. Just because I get to have conversations at a level with mm-hmm. leaders in businesses that mm-hmm. They feel safe, right? They feel like I'm a consultant who's come alongside them and really sees their best interest in mind and really wanting to help them. And so they start to share probably more than they should. Mm-hmm. And I love that I know you now, Andy. I have someone to refer them to. Absolutely. Because there's definitely times I'm getting into things, I'm like, man, that's way above my pay grade.
I'm just going to walk away slowly.
Well, and to Brandon's point, when we are in close relationship with people, either they're directly on our team, they're employees of ours, they're clients, or you're in a community, in an ecosystem, we want to build up that trust. We want to be with people and be connected heart to heart so that the work can get done and we can all share in the joy of seeing a mission move forward. Mm-hmm. And not everybody has a skill set to tenderly hold stress, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I I have a similar background to Andy, and I have the skill set, but like I shared when I was expressing it with a few folks, I'm like, it was almost as if all my skills were in a glass cabinet with a lock on it. I could see the things that I ought to be doing for self-care and to not own this for myself and to be there for this person, but they were under lock and key, and I couldn't find the key. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate the conversation. I will say that I hope that, you know, both Kate and Brandon, you both come back another time, or hopefully even more than that, for, you know, broader conversations around the startup community and the work that you do to serve our business owners and entrepreneurs. Andy, I know, thought this would be a great conversation because I think, as we've all expressed, and Brandon so beautifully stated, and I hadn't thought about this, but just starting a business is a traumatic experience.
Yes.
It's stressful. Well,
how much vulnerability,
and
right?
Vulnerable.
If I succeed, I'm afraid. If I fail, I'm afraid. Because if I succeed, then what's going to be required of me? How am I going to have to show up? I don't know how to do that because this is just an idea or a passion. I'm so deeply connected to it, but I find people very commonly get stuck in sort of, I would say, like a lifestyle business instead of going higher or thinking. I typically say, what was your dream when you started this and why have you stopped? You know, you reached a certain amount of success and you just stopped because it's too scary. It's like, you know, going into the darkness. And then, of course, if you fail, then everybody that told you you couldn't and shouldn't is right. So you're just in a pickle from the beginning.
And to stage all of this, I think what's really important is to understand some background on how prevalent trauma actually is. The largest study that was ever done about 2 years ago by multiple national global organizations looked at about 24 different countries, 60,000 plus individuals, just a ginormous study. And what they found is that about 82% of people in the U.S. have experienced a traumatic event. Now, when we look at it, about 30% have experienced four or more traumatic events. The U.S. was ranked third highest out of 24 countries in regards to traumatic events. So just a high prevalence of trauma happening. And what we know, even on the mental health side, is that entrepreneurs have 11 times the rate of bipolar disorder than traditional individuals, four times the rate of addiction, twice the rate of depression, and six times the rate of ADHD. Now, a lot of us can look at each one of those categories and say, okay, those are distinctly different from trauma. But what we know about childhood trauma is that if we've experienced childhood trauma, the rate of bipolar disorder, the rate of depression, the rate of anxiety, the rate of ADHD goes up exponentially. So we really have to be talking about where are the roots to the issues that are actually going on. And that's why I really focus on trauma, because I believe this is the issue that has to be talked about. Depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, very important. But if we don't get to the roots, we're missing something very, very fundamental about how prevalent trauma is and how it, like I said, utterly fractures our ability to connect with ourselves and connect with others, which is, even talking with Brandon this last week, he used this language of, in businesses, we have this human element, right? Which is, and even talking with you, Mike, around this idea of all business is essentially relationships, right? Now, if that's the issue, if that's the reality that all businesses are about relationship and the success of a company is about relationships, then we have to address trauma because that is the one thing that most disrupts relationships.
And guides our conversations,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of times stuff that happens in your childhood can seem really overwhelming, right? Because it happened to you when you were a child. You're, you know, as you become an adult, you still are relating to it in the way that it happened to you as a child. So it can feel overwhelming and it can make you feel hopeless or helpless. And so what do? We just sort of hide it. But I have personally done work around that and you know, worked with Andy on learning about how to help people in the workplace to do it. And I think it's the words I like that you use, Andy, is learning your story, because ultimately you have endless possibilities on your life and how you want to live and what you want to stand for and how you want to regard everything that's ever happened to you. So unshackling yourself from that by rewriting your story or understanding, giving yourself empathy and grace and deciding you know, how you want that to impact you. It's not easy work, but it's freedom.
I love that you mentioned story. I think, again, whether you're part of an ecosystem, if you're just an independent or a solopreneur, or you're part of a larger group, this generous relationship that we can have with each other that's, again, vulnerable and candid, when we see someone stuck in story or defaulting back to story, aren't there certain ways, Andy, that we can, if we have that relationship built, we can not call them on it, but hold them in a space where we can say, hey, listen, that sounds like your old story. Mm-hmm. And what, who have you said, like you said earlier, Kenny, that who do you stand to be, mm-hmm. As you're growing this business? Let me hold you there.
Yeah. And it's beautiful with what you're talking about, Kieran, and what you're talking about, Kate, is this idea of really being with somebody and connecting with them and helping them walk through their story. The problem with that is that avoidance is one of the most common symptoms of trauma. So what that means is that if one of us is experiencing a traumatic event or living out a trauma that we've experienced, and I come and connect with you on that and you start sharing about your pain, if I haven't resolved or dealt with my own pain, I'm not going to tolerate staying there and connecting with you to be that presence. I'm actually going to want to find a way to close that discussion mm-hmm. up. And that can actually become re-traumatizing in a lot of ways, because what it does is it communicates that my story is too traumatic for someone to be able to hold.
Yeah, or I'm unworthy.
Or I'm unworthy. Mm-hmm. And what I see in my office a lot is just these different kinds of coping mechanisms of how people deal with their pain. And frequently what I see is with business owners or CEOs or founders who come in, within the first minute, they will tell me, I really want tools to know how to move forward. And I will have to tell them that that's actually part of the problem of why you're here, is because you're so focused on moving that you don't know what it's like to slow down. Because when we slow down, we have to face those things we're running from. And that's typically childhood pain, that's trauma, that's a sense of identity, it's loss, it's grief. And what I'll find is that people will spend a lot of money coming to see me to not actually talk about what is going on. They will spend the whole 50 minutes of our session not talking about the issue until I can slow them down and say, what's actually going on? What's actually going on beneath all of this rambling and all of this talking? And then they say, you know, I just feel like a failure. I feel anxiety. As soon as I slow down, I feel all of my story kind of bubble up. And I think if we don't know how to slow down with people and be present, we won't provide a space that helps them know themselves better. So we actually have to go first as leaders and do our own work mm-hmm. in order to inspire this in the workplace. That's specifically why I work with CEOs and founders, is because if we can inspire high-level leaders to know their story and heal from their story, maybe they can provide a presence and a place for people to do that.
And Andy, what are the ramifications of not doing that?
Well, if we don't, we have this thing in therapy called bringing the unconscious conscious. And what we mean by that is if we aren't aware of our story, we will be living out our story no matter whether we know it or not. Maya Angelou has this quote that says, I did what I knew, but when I knew better, I did better. That if we aren't aware of where we come from and how that impacts the way we relate to people, the way we use our power. Okay, so that's a huge national discussion right now on this issue of power from high-level leaders. If we don't understand how we use our power, why we use our power to abuse and misuse, we will inevitably live that out. We will be trying to heal our trauma in ways that are dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. But if we can slow down to actually notice what's there, then we have power to change it. But that can't happen until we slow down.
I think as CEOs and leaders of a company, you have an important barometer to check this out, and that is your employees. If you're seeing your employees leaving or, you know, experience trauma from you, you'll see it, you know, read your exit interviews, see how engaged your company is. When I talk to new CEOs, very commonly, 80% of the time, they say, I need you to teach me how to get my employees to work harder. And I'm always kind of chuckle in my head, because obviously, if you think about your favorite boss that you've ever worked for, inside the workplace, it is like a family, right? So your executives, your CEO, whatever, that's the dad or the mom. So in a family, all the children, they want to please their parents naturally. And in our country, you leave college and you go get a job. And then what do? You try to get acknowledged. I'm going to get acknowledged by my boss. I'm going to get a raise. I'm going to get a promotion. I'm going to make the fridge. And I'm going to go, right? So the idea that you have unengaged workforce says something about you as a leader. It says that you're not being authentic. You're not hearing or seeing your employees. You haven't created a safe space. Naturally, their livelihood depends on how much you like them, right? So they're coming to work wanting to please you, like just every day naturally. And so if that's not happening, usually the first place is working with them. Then we can start with everyone else. But if it's going to take something, and if they don't have that thing, they're not willing to commit, then there's not going to be change.
You know, it's interesting, and this conversation is really, really important. You know, the idea that leaders have this assumption that they need to be also really good shock absorbers, mm-hmm. right? And so because they've kind of declared themselves by having the one with the vision mm-hmm. initially and kind of making that declaration, like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to leave. In some cases, I'm going to leave a steady 9-to-5 or whatever, and I'm going to start this thing. This is a burning problem. I want to solve it, and I feel like I'm the one that can solve it best. And so along the way, they have to accumulate all these skills to be able to do that. It's not just being a subject matter expert, you know, to build a product or service or whatever. It requires a set of leadership skills to build the team around that. And so in doing that and executing against that, they run into the trauma. Because really, trauma with starting a startup doesn't hit until like maybe year 2 or 3. You know, because before that, it's a blast. It's like a lot of fun. The process of starting is excellent. It's like really exciting until you realize like, whole, you know, I wasn't prepared for this. So then you start to assume that role as shock absorber. And that usually happens the second you hire your first employee, right? Because then you have to maintain this persona as the one that can absorb all the challenges, right? Delegate responsibilities, but really absorb, you know, the challenges of it. And I think to what Kate's talking about, is that your employees, as they grow and as you build these bigger teams, they can sense that. You may think you're doing your job as a leader by absorbing the challenges, by absorbing the fact that maybe you're the one that knows that in 3 months you don't know how you're going to make payroll, or in 2 months, or in 2 weeks, right? And you've got all these people that are there to not only because they bought into the mission, but they bought into you as a leader. Because otherwise, it's really hard to recruit, you know, within a startup, right? You don't have a lot of sustainability that's expected of, you know. So now you've got these employees that are, you know, they've got responsibilities themselves. They've got families they're raising. They've got rent or mortgages or whatever. And so, but not being candid with them, you know, I think a lot of leaders, especially startup leaders, fail to realize that their candidness actually not only creates a stronger culture within the company, but it alleviates some of that stress within them. And these are things that we found ourselves talking a lot about with our cohort, with our portfolio ventures that we work with, because you'll hear things come up. So we run monthly sessions. We call them accountability check-ins. And a lot of that is baked into performance, right? But to perform as a venture, you have to perform as a leader. And in doing that, it is recognizing that, yeah, you may have a team of 15, 20, 40 people. They sense your stress, right? And so your ability to create a candid, radically candid, you know, radical candor is a term I like to use a lot in the workplace. Netflix has actually pioneered this. And here's a company of tens of thousands of people, right? But they've pioneered this concept of radical candor. And that's actually helped that company's leadership be better leaders, right? It's not just a slogan. It's not just something that, you know, that helps them recruit. So it's an important piece to all of that.
I don't think that people talk about how lonely the job of CEO is. It's hard. A lot of times when I'll come in and do a leadership training for the exec team, and then I'll do one for the mid-level managers, which I love because that's the one that makes the most impact, I kind of have to work real hard to get to them. The first thing I do, I spend 15 minutes trying to create an awareness and an empathy for the level above them. Because I think they just, they don't understand. They haven't been in that position. But what I like to say about CEOs is When you're a CEO, every time you make a decision and you have to make 250 of them a day, every decision you make is wrong to someone, right? You're failing someone. So it's just constant weighing. I've seen to what you're saying, Brandon, when a founder has his first employee or the rock star that he was really proud he landed, and it's just time for them to go, right? Because you don't start and end with the same employees. They take it so hard. It says something about them. I failed that person. And I'm, you know, it doesn't actually say anything about you. You had a good haul. Inside the mind of a CEO is usually gobs and gobs and gobs of shame and this heaviness around failure and success, both. So it's quite interesting. And I feel just honored that I get to be a mirror sometimes for them and say, this is actually what I see. And this is what your employees say about you. And here's what the community thinks about your company. And we're very hard on each other and ourselves, generally speaking. And so grace is just the largest gift you can give anybody, I feel.
And I've found that it's actually really, really difficult with some of the leaders that I work with for them to expose that they actually need somebody. And a little bit of the science behind this, or maybe not science, just kind of narrative behind this, is that when we experience abuse, especially as a child, we learn that those who have power or access to our vulnerabilities will inevitably always hurt us. So if we carry that narrative and that narrative hasn't been healed, we will be in positions where we don't want to expose vulnerability because every time we were vulnerable in the past, people use that against us. And I know just personally from the workplace, I was in a company a couple of years ago where I was trying my best to be extremely vulnerable as part of that organization. And I opened myself up a lot to the leadership there and they let me go. And there was a lot of things that came against me that they said I did that I actually didn't do. And it was really difficult for me. It was very traumatic for me because, you know, we had just bought a home. My wife was 8 months pregnant at the time. I was out of work for a couple months. And it was just this another reminder that I can't trust leadership. And then I have to ask myself this question of, wow, why do I always want to pursue being my own boss? Why do people want to pursue being a CEO or a founder or an entrepreneur? Well, the reality is, I believe sometimes we want to be in the most powerful positions because if we're in the highest level of power, people can't wound us. Now, that can be really damaging if we don't know that narrative because we'll inevitably use that power then to push people down, to kind of hide all our vulnerability. But if a leader can embrace, even if they can embrace, wow, I'm drawn towards power simply because I'm afraid of vulnerability. If they can own that, then they can move beyond that and start to let people in. But it's just really hard. It's really hard for me. And I think it's really hard for a lot of leaders to expose themselves because there is this fear of how can I trust that this person has my best interest in mind? And how can I trust that they won't hurt me like everybody else has in the past?
I see this come into play a lot with co-founder relationships too. So typically you'll see a CEO that would never, ever consider having a co-founder or a business partner. It's them against the world, period. And everyone, and the gap between them and the rest of the company is vast. Those are the you know, strong believers in top-down leadership. And they're typically micromanagers and they're involved in everything. And these are the people that say, yes, go do the design. And then, you know, a week before they're about to go to market, they're in there tinkering and changing everything. And then there's the other people that always pursue partnership because they don't want to stand on their own. And that they would never consider standing on their own. It's always about the partner. And I find that there usually is in that situation, some kind of a codependency or an unhealthy relying, not always, but like a lot of times it's like that. I can't handle it all. So I'm just going to, anytime there's something wrong, I'm going to say it was their fault because I don't want to take ownership of it. And this isn't all the time, obviously, but I see this happen more times than not. It's interesting. I'm just thinking about it as it pertains to myself right now. So it's true.
I'm hearing some keywords. So I'm going to summarize a little bit. So I'm hearing transparency, radical candor,
right? A selfishness to be alone, right? Feeling lonely and not surrounding yourself with the right people to be radically candid with. It was interesting, Brandon, I was thinking through kind of my own experience with my own company. One of our core values is candor. And there's a level of candor that we strive for. And we strive for as high a level as we can. But it's interesting that I can be more candid with my teammates and with my employees than some of them want me to be. I've had employees tell me, you know what, I'd rather not know that because that puts too much pressure on me to perform or, you know, whatever it is. And we often that brings a good conversation. It's like, well, why is that, right? Let's talk about what's going on there. But I do think there's a level of fluctuation in candor. And maybe I'm going to put this out and let you guys talk about it, is that perhaps that we haven't given ourselves the right people to be as radically candid as possible with.
Because they're not used to it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly limits, but I think it's not easy to get used to because you're not used to it, right? It's not, you know, you're typically, especially if you're working in a big corporation, you're usually kind of in the dark on what your performance is until something happens and it's like, oh, I guess I wasn't performing at the level that I should have been. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, I mean, that puts startups, you know, in a really unique position to establish that early with that first employee, you know, and not wait until they get further down and then they read some, you know, blog post or Medium article and say, oh, that'd be great. Let's implement that. Well, you've got 300 employees. Good luck. Right. Because then you'll get a lot of that shock and awe.
Yeah. Culture shift is really hard
absolutely
at that point.
Yeah. And it's not, I mean, in some cases, you can see some startups with small teams like going a little bit over the top with culture. It's like, wait, it's just the four of us. Like, do we really need, you know, to implement this now? And the answer is yes. If the vision is to build a big company, right, then the answer is yes. Even if the vision is to build a small company, you know, really focus more on a lifestyle, you know, business, the answer is yes.
I think that culture is a further distinguishment of like what you stand for and your purpose. Brené Brown has this great quote about purpose, how it's an intrinsic need of all of us. We spend the majority of our life at work. If we don't know what we stand for at work and we don't know how to be successful at work, it will eke into all of the different avenues of your life and aspects of your life. For me, the first thing that came to my mind when you posed that question, Mike, was passive aggressiveness. I'm in a personal battle with it. I deal with it every day. And it really is everyone's story impacting their communication style is what I find. And so we role play a lot with people on they do not think they're being passive aggressive. They think they're being direct and nice, right? I'm going to say this in a nice way and then I just down with the sandwich approach, like, you know, the positive, negative, positive. People can't hear what you're saying. And I have a personal story. I had early in my career, I worked at Vistaprint when it was really young, 50 employees. I was a recruiting assistant. So this was 15 years ago. And I had a difficult conversation with this hiring manager that I had to have. And I was so afraid. He was very strong personality. And I needed to tell him that I needed him to accept my invitations so that I knew how to handle the candidate. So I schedule a time with him and I get ready. I write a speech, like I'm preparing to have this. So I go in and I say, thank you so much for your time. And this will be really quick. I know you're busy. So it would be great if you could, you know, accept my invite so I can help with candidates. But if you can't do that, that's okay. But you just have to tell me that you can't do it and then I'll make it work. And so he's just looking at me like, what are you doing? So I said, okay, we're done. Okay. And like, I leave. And that was my opportunity to be clear with him and to stand for something. And I didn't do it. I don't think he knew what I was trying to say. I don't think I knew what I was trying to say. So that was, I remember that meeting and that was when I decided that that was not who I wanted to be and that was not who I was going to stand to be. And I actively worked on being direct. Now, directness is scary because you have to know how you feel first. Most people, I think, waffle and just naturally. You have to decide how the person on the other side may or may not receive how you feel. And then you have to be willing to be vulnerable and have a level of negotiation. So we do a lot of role playing in organizations with, I need you to accept the meeting invite because I can't do my job if you don't. Do you have a problem with that? Or is there anything I can do to help you? That's all the conversation needed to be. I find there's a light that comes on with people when they realize that actually being nice and being collaborative is being direct. It's simplifying everything. So there's no hidden motive. I'm sure we all worked with someone where we know where we stand with them.
It's refreshing.
It's refreshing. Be that person.
Yeah, even if they're abrupt, it's refreshing. You had mentioned, what'd you say for the candor? You had a adjective.
Radical candor.
Yep. I use the term ruthless compassion. Mm-hmm. I will always be compassionate. Not always. I strive to be compassionate in my communication. And there are times that I need to be ruthless in my delivery because I trust that you can move forward with that. It feels like a similar conversation.
I think when you're direct too, that confidence that you're creating, it does create the safe space. You know, here's where I stand. Where do you stand? Let's figure this out.
Yeah. This becomes a little bit complex, kind of what you're talking about, Mike, in this workplace around radical candor. I'd love to hear everybody's thoughts, but this idea of employees, right, being honest and transparent with one another, but can a leader, can a founder or CEO or high-level leader be transparent with their employees? And this conversation becomes difficult because do employees want their leaders to be transparent with them because they project upon them whatever they need them to be? I've worked a lot with in the faith community around ministry leaders, and the reality is people who are in faith-based congregations don't really want their pastor to be transparent because they project upon their pastor whatever they need him to be. Mm-hmm. So this reality is that if one of those leaders exposes himself, they will be basically eaten alive by their congregation. Mm-hmm. And I think part of this might be similar for business in the reality of do CEOs and founders need to find other CEOs and founders to connect with, or can they be transparent with their team? And I don't quite know that, but I'd love to hear a little bit of thoughts from everybody.
I think, sorry, sure, Brandon, you look like you're about to say it.
Yeah,
so.
I had to process it first, though, but go ahead.
Well, I'm gonna tack on to what you already said. I think it does start with assessing where your own employee culture is already at. Only from my own personal experience, I can speak, and that is, we've had a strong level of candor and directness as a part of our culture, really almost from day one. And we've brought employees in who did not come from that culture, right? You talk about, you know, the typical corporate culture that people are accustomed to doesn't preach that, right? Because it's all about appearance. It's all about just hitting the numbers, and we all have to remain confident, right? Because if we don't remain confident, this all sinks because that's the only thing keeping us afloat. And I can't tell you how many like startup founders and executives I've talked to who that's their biggest struggle, right? Yeah. They can never really show what's really going on because then people would lose faith in them and in their organization. So I think that's the first thing is assessing where the culture is already at and what level are people willing to allow the leader to be transparent. And I've struggled with that. Like, I think that's why I asked the question before, was because I've had moments where I go, man, if I was less transparent, would it be easier to lead? Because people wouldn't see as many of my failings. Would I not second guess myself as often? Because they wouldn't know that I'm struggling with this. Now, the funny thing is, and we already talked about this, if you have a tight-knit culture to some degree, right? It doesn't take a whole lot. At least the people you're working with on a day-to-day basis, maybe not everybody in your organization, but at least those you work with closely, they know. They already know. And I've had like employees tell me like, hey, last month the financials probably weren't very good, were they? And I went, no, they weren't. How did you know? They're like, yeah, we can tell when you're stressed. And it's usually the financials. I was like, oh, that's a good point. That's a really good point. I need to work on that and let you guys in on that sooner so that you're not, you know, waiting around trying to figure out what the heck Mike's thinking. Mm-hmm. So I think it starts with understanding your own kind of company culture, but I'm really interested to hear what the rest of you think about also surrounding yourself with outside people, right? Not necessarily in the organization.
Yeah. I think the only thing I would add to that is there's a difference between transparency and being indecisive, right? Mm-hmm. And so being transparent and being vulnerable through that is actually a very powerful thing. Now, being transparent, but then not having, you know, not being able to be decisive is like, okay, how do we push through this, mm-hmm. right? I mean, startups are just, you know, friction, and growth is just friction removed, right? And so if the leader of that startup, you know, it can be incredibly transparent and think they're kind of checking all the boxes of being a good startup leader. But then if they can't be decisive through that, then it is purely, you know, level of transparency that isn't effective. Because then it's like, I mean, it's one thing to kind of empower your team to help solve challenges. In fact, that's recognition of a good startup leader is recognizing like everybody in that room, your employee, your, you know, that team you've built, they all have choices. They can go seek out a more sustainable career path, you know, in a more stable company where they're not even thinking about whether or not that paycheck's going to show up on Friday, right? But they've bought into your vision. And so they've signed up for an experience that is different than going to work for, you know, say a bank or, you know, a hospital, whatever. So leveraging that as a benefit of being able to do that. And so the transparency comes through, hey, we need to solve this together. Not that I'm waffling on what to do next. We just lost our most important customer. What do we do? You know, that's the kind of stress that teams don't want to see in their leader. They want to see the leader step to the mic and say, we just lost our biggest customer. We need to solve. I need everybody here this weekend. We need to figure this out. We need to figure out how to get them back or how we're going to recover from
this. It hurts like hell. And
yeah,
this is what we're doing.
But we're in this together because it's just the 10 of us or 20 or whatever.
And in this discussion, I'm hearing a lot of this idea of, okay, the leader then is going first. The leader's going first. The leader is guiding and leading. But I ask this question of, okay, well, who is above the leader supporting them? And I think that's a really important conversation that really draws me into this issue of mental health and trauma is if we require so much of our leaders to produce and to have outcomes, I hope that we can also treat them as a human being, mm-hmm. which means that they have family, they might have kids, they might have a life outside of the business. And how do we just support them as people around knowing their story and healing from their story? And that's where I would love to see more organizations, more resources kind of above CEOs and founders to be able to pour into them where those individuals or organizations don't need anything from them. It's simply an opportunity to be poured into. Now, the complexity of that is it also requires that someone opens themselves up to be poured into. And I think that's really difficult, especially when there's drama like I talked about that's unresolved because I can't trust that someone will use my exposure for my good.
And we're not conscious of that either, right?
Exactly.
That's the whole point, I think, of our conversation today is that if you haven't, I'm going to use the term healed, your trauma from the past, you don't know what you don't know. You can't identify it, but the stress and the inconsistency in your communication and the starts and the stops, while it's wreaking havoc and it's creating a lot of stress, you may not be able to identify or get out of that rabbit hole without having someone outside of your organization to go to and work through these pieces, right?
And we actually don't support this idea of reflecting back on our stories. No business book that I've read really digs into this idea of, okay, we want some outcome moving forward. How is it going to look for us to look at ages 0 to 18 to get the best outcome moving forward? No business book really talks about that. And yet, what I realize is it's that age group, 0 to 18, which probably drives the majority of our behavior. I always talk about with my leaders that I work with that inside of you, you always carry around that child. And when you feel embarrassed, when you feel insecure, when all these things come up, it's probably not you as this functional, healthy, confident adult. It's probably this part of you at some point that wasn't healed that you carry around repetitively. And they don't know what to do with that.
One of the things that I used to talk a lot with my clients when I was doing this kind of work was there is our chronological age and our emotional age. And when we've experienced trauma, while we keep growing chronologically and keep getting older, emotionally, sometimes we get stuck in that spot where that trauma took place. So when I was working with business owners and or, you know, high powered couples, I was able to say, like, when you got into this argument or you got into this situation with your partner that you couldn't resolve it and you're both stuck in your corners, how old do you think you might have been in that moment when you were trying to, you know, stand your ground and make your point? And then asking that same question of the partner so they could back it out and just look at, oh my gosh, right? So chronological age is certainly one thing. And I like to make it a personal goal, and I think we're all sharing the same thing here, that I'm continuing to grow emotionally as well. And when I do look back at the past, at the things that influenced me and the trauma that I've had, how can I heal that story and use it as a catalyst for growth so that my emotional growth continues to keep up with this 53-year-old woman?
I think that that's a really important point. Continually pursuing self-growth and self-improvement, I think, is an important component of any leader, healthy leadership, relationship with leadership, I think. So what's working for you now probably isn't going to work for you next year, next month, you know, depending on how fast your startup is growing. So the vulnerability, how comfortable you are with vulnerability, there's this philosophy of you are the five people that you surround yourself with. I take that to heart, and I swap in and out. So if I see myself falling short in one area, I'll go pursue someone to get them closer to me so that I can work on that. And for me, that has been, you know, monumental for my growth as a leader and as a business owner, as a mom, as a friend. And I think when it comes to your leadership in a company, the best boss that I ever had was a boss that I don't even know if he knew he was doing it, but every time we had a conversation, he held space for me. So he would come in and say, you know, we had a problem with this. I must have not communicated it right to you, or I must have. And so I wasn't on the defensive. And in many cases, I was like, actually, no, you did communicate it to me. I just whiffed. Like, my apologies. How are we going to fix it? I so enjoyed working with him, and I try to model him in my day because that experience was engaging to me. And I grew more in that job with him than I have any other job. So I think that's important to know and reflect on as you move throughout your day.
So it's almost the top of the hour. It goes very quickly, especially at WOW, right, Brandon? It goes so quickly, especially with, again, such an important topic. Before we kind of close out and maybe have some closing words from each of us, I would love to hear from Andy. What are some skills and techniques that leaders can apply to help heal and
tools.
Stay grounded? Yeah, just in 30
tools.
Seconds. Like, you know, no, just kidding. I know clearly it's a longer process, but when we're dealing with trauma, and it's in the midst, whether it's us or an employee going through it or whatever it is, do you just have what are the?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'll just leave it at that.
The biggest thing to heal from trauma is being in the present moment. And what I mean by that is if we are reliving our trauma, that means we actually feel like our trauma is happening to us again. We go into fight, flight, or freeze. We respond and act like that little kid that we once were. So a very important thing is to be connected actually with our bodies and the here and now. So what I will actually have people do is I'll have them place both feet on the ground. And what that does is it actually grounds an individual, because when we're in trauma, we actually feel like we're floating and kind of disconnecting from the space where we're at. So feet flat on the ground, I have them straighten their spine, and I have them take a couple deep breaths. Now, what that does neurologically is we have a nerve called the vagus nerve, which goes from the base of our brain all the way down to our hip. And when we inhale, what it does is it sends messages up to our brain to relax. So small things like that, adjusting my posture can actually adjust my mood, can help me feel more grounded. So when I'm engaging with someone or talking with somebody, if my legs are crossed and my arms are crossed and I'm hunched over, I'm in a very dysregulated position. And what I actually need to do is I need to change my body to help support my emotion. The second thing I would say is very simply, be in community where you can be honest about your story and not just on a factual level, like data. I'm talking about sharing your story and being able to expose some emotion behind your story. It could be about your divorce. It could be about your childhood, whatever it is. I believe Maya Angelou once said, the greatest burden someone carries is a story that's untold. And I love that because we all have these narratives, these stories that we carry. And when we share, it releases that. And that could be with a therapist. It could be with a spiritual leader. It could be with another co-founder or CEO. We need to have spaces, though, where we're simply talking about our stories and sharing our stories with one another. So those are two things that can be helpful.
Real quick, so spending time with Andy is really intimidating because I know he is studying my body language like at all times.
Not just your body language.
I hunch and I cross my arms a lot.
You're so closed, Brandon.
I am. Let's add an hour to this. Let's break me down.
Well, yeah, let's just do a session with Brandon.
Impromptu therapy session.
Live public session. That sounds
very
therapeutic.
We got close there with Kate and I. We almost went there. Actually, Andy, too. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be great therapy for the rest of us, that's for sure.
Yeah,
well,
you.
I was expecting to get therapy from you all. Because...
Yeah, right. I think that's the beauty of this kind of conversation is that no one is looking to be the expert around this. We all know that it's continual learning. I know my background is as a certified coach, but there's no regulation with the coaching industry, right? So it's not therapy, it's not counseling, psychiatry. It is pretty open wide. Like someone could literally open up their laptop, grab a website and hang their shingle and call themselves a coach.
And many people do.
And sadly, many people do, and several of which are doing a disservice to the professionals who really have the skill set, the training, the academic, as well as the practical work to help people make a difference. And I personally have found, actually with this most recent situation, I was very transparent, as I mentioned, on social media. And I had some people minutes before I spoke at NSA on Saturday, I had a couple of people who are in my circle social media wise and walked up to me and said, I'm worried about you. Why didn't you call to ask for my help? You know that I take care of these kinds of things for a living. And within moments, it became all about them. Instead of asking the simple question, hey, saw your post. Are you looking for help on this? It would have been a significant shift for me. And I do look for help, but I'm going to go to the folks that I know are also doing their work as they grow into their profession as well.
I find that, you know, true leadership is taking the first step, right? So in any situation where I'm at, if I'm just like, I had a crazy morning with my son, then multiple people in the room probably also had a crazy morning with their kid because kids are crazy. Or I'm going through something really personal right now and I'm feeling heavy and overwhelmed. So I'm sorry if I can't show up in the way that I want to. You're not alone. And that's the thing. You're never alone in the way you feel and in your even in your life situations. There's more commonality between us than difference. We spent a lot of energy creating a facade that we need to reinforce instead of just owning our own authenticity. And this is why the confidence and the peace that you can achieve by just allowing yourself to be equal parts good and bad, infallible and also amazing, and just trying your best, it allows everybody else to try their best, but also to be human. This idea that we're just going to be at 110% every minute. I mean, who's this serving? I just don't get it. I think that's why people are really stressed out and lonely.
With that, I would love for us to make sure that we share our information. So Kate, can you let us know how we can get a hold of you and what it looks like to get started coming into CoVibe?
Absolutely.
CoVibe? Did I get that CoVibe, right?
Yeah. I'm at CoVibe Kate on Twitter. And Kate at CoVibe.co is my email. Why did I just say that? Now I'm going to get spammed. So I like to meet people where they're at. So the first conversation is just that. It's a conversation, and I want to help people that want to be helped. And I'm not a miracle worker. We'll work together, but I'm happy to give advice. I'm happy to work more closely if that's needed. I'm really, really interested in empowering people. I get as much out of it as they do. It's my work, so would be happy to talk to anyone.
Great. Andy, if you could share your contact information. I said that we weren't looking to be experts here, but I am looking to you as the expert. So I'll admit it straight up. And we know that folks listening could benefit from time with you. So please, what does that look like and how can we find you?
Yeah, I work at the Phoenix Counseling Collective. We're on 6th Avenue in Roosevelt. I usually see about 20 clients a week. So I have a couple slots available. What that typically looks like is people just emailing me at andy@phxcounselingcollective.com. And we essentially have a small conversation over the phone. I get to hear about what's going on. I see if I'm a good fit for them. And then we set up an initial appointment to kind of walk through that. Another way that I really am trying to support the entrepreneur startup community is just about having these kinds of conversations. So whether that's being able to speak to groups of CEOs or founders or other entrepreneurs, that's really my passion. Because especially with trauma, if we miss the education piece, we're really doing a disservice because it's a very large issue that's very complex that we do need some of the data and some of the science behind it in order to make sense of, one, what to do with it, but also, two, why is this so important?
One thing that Mike and I didn't mention is that we both are co-founders of this wonderful thing called Phoenix Startup Week. And last year, I did the programming for Phoenix Startup Week and Mike was marketing. And we had a little segment called Founder F-Ups, where I asked founders to come and share the biggest mistake that they made. No fluff. I don't want to hear about the silver lining and how it worked out well in the end. Just get up. You have 5 minutes to talk about your failing. This was hands down the most popular segment that we had. We had it at 10 a.m. every morning. And I asked many, many leaders in our community to do it. And I was surprised by people that would not make themselves available. And I was surprised by who did. I mean, it was my baby. I was so proud of it because it's obviously, it's close to my heart. But the people that stood up and shared, the audience was on the edge of their seat. They were like, this is Zach Ferris. And he's telling me about how he's in a parking lot in LA and about, you know, about to get sued. And like, everybody was like, what? And then at the end, we let him leave. Yeah, obviously Zach Ferris is fine, but like it was really impactful, and I was glad that our community got to experience that. I'm certainly going to try to influence that happening again this year.
Yeah, it's a great session.
So closing thoughts, Brandon, and how can we get involved?
To learn more about Startup AZ, so startupaz.org, and you can actually connect with me there. We're startup_AZ at startup_AZ on Twitter. I mean, I guess my parting shot would be is find your tribe. I think the individual work that Kate does and Andy does is unbelievably valuable, and it can help you kind of peel back the onion a little bit. But find your tribe. You know, that's what we really emphasize. And we by no means are the arbiter of the startup ecosystem, and all founders to see success have to flow through kind of our program. But find your tribe, because it is lonely at the top. And so identify that, and then embrace generosity, embrace radical candor in your company, as big or as small as it is. Those are two very, very powerful things. But thank you.
Yeah. Karen, thank you again for letting me co-host with you. And it was awesome getting to hear from all these guests, some of whom I've known for a while. And Brandon, thank you. It was awesome getting to know you. And people can find me at resoundcreative.com or remarkamike.com. That's probably the better place to find out all the things I'm doing. And if you want to get a hold of me, Mike@resoundcreative.com is my email.
Great. Thank you all. It's an intense conversation, but an important one. And as I said in the beginning, I would invite each of you to come back. I think, Andy, we've got you slated, I think, for a couple different segments on different shows that we have coming out of here. Mm-hmm. So to Kate and Brandon as well, we'd love to have you back. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within the Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona studio. Sun Media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki.